Hello, friends, and welcome to Crossroads, where faith and culture meet. I'm Rita Peters. My co-host Mark Meckler is traveling today, but he is certainly with us in spirit. Today, we're going to talk about a topic that is very close to my heart, Mark's heart, and most importantly, it's close to the heart of our Creator. It's the topic of life. For almost 50 years, our nation lived under a regime of Supreme Court mandated legalized abortion in all 50 states. That all changed, of course, with the current court's landmark decision in Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization in 2022. So today we'll talk about where things stand today in the battle to protect life. And we have two highly qualified guests with us to do just that. They're both leaders at the highly influential organization, Americans United for Life. First, we have Stephen Aiden, who serves as Chief Legal Officer and General Counsel for AUL. Steve is a highly experienced litigator. He's appeared in court against the abortion industry dozens of times and has been appointed by the attorneys general of six states to defend pro-life laws. Steve, welcome.
Thank you, Reed. It's a pleasure.
Also with us today is John Mize, who was appointed just this year as the new CEO of Americans United for Life. John has worked as Executive Vice President for Business Development at the New York-based Crohn's and Colitis Foundation. He is a board member at Mental Health America and a committee member at the Richmond West End Auxiliary of Young Life, which is a ministry very dear to the hearts in my family. John, welcome to Crossroads.
Yeah, thanks, Rita. I'm excited for the conversation today.
Me too. It should be an interesting one, and I think it's going to go by all too quickly. So let's dive right in. And Steve, I want to start with you because you've been with AUL for several years now. Tell us about the organization generally, and then maybe talk about how the battle to protect life has changed since the Dobbs decision.
Sure, Rita. Thank you very much. As everybody knows, the Dobbs case almost 2 years ago now totally reset the table for protecting life in the Congress and in the states. It overturned Roe versus Wade, declared there is no federal constitutional right to abortion, and sent the matter back to the people, is what the Supreme Court said. A lot of people misconstrue that. They think that the court sent the matter back to the states, but in fact, it sent the matter back to the people acting through their legislatures in both the Congress and the states. And so there's a role to play for both there. Since then, Americans United for Life has been working very hard. We are the original, we like to say, pro-life advocacy organization headquartered in Washington, D.C. We've been involved in this issue since 1971, 2 years before Roe versus Wade. And we've been engaged in every Supreme Court decision related to abortion since then. It's our privilege to have written the bulk of the state pro-life policy, hundreds of pro-life bills in the states in the last 15 years or so. And we've done a lot in the courts, too. We represent members of Congress before the Supreme Court on key briefs like the June Medical Brief, the Dobbs Brief, in which we had 228 members of Congress, and most recently, the Chemical Abortion Brief in Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, and the EMTALA brief, which we can talk about a little later, having to do with how the Biden administration can force emergency department staff to do elective abortions. So it's been my privilege to be aboard since 2017, blessed to do the work that we do, excited about our new CEO, John, and very glad you can hear from him as well.
Me too. It's a great privilege to have both of you. So, John, as a brand new leader with AUL, what is your vision for the organization in this very new and different legal landscape?
Yeah, Rita, thank you for the question. And we're in a rather complex environment now where previously all efforts, energy, focus was on overturning Roe v. Wade. We're now in a much more complicated environment when the court returned this issue to the people. There is a significant need not only from a legal and a policy perspective to continue to advance the cause for life, both at the federal level and all 50 of the states. There's also very much so a need to change and persuade hearts and minds across the country. AUL is never going to do it in a vacuum. We're not going to do it in a silo. We are absolutely committed to a networked vision of leadership across all of the pro-life movement to incrementally move the needle towards a pro-life culture. And a pro-life culture acknowledges that what we're dealing with is a spiritual and a moral issue. This is not a political issue. The other side has done a very good job of making this a political issue and dividing this country. It's not. It's simply not a political issue that we're dealing with in the pro-life movement. We're dealing with an issue that's spiritual and moral in nature. The science has been proven from a medical perspective. This has been proven that life begins at conception. And the idea that we are systematically killing human beings and it being celebrated is in fact a moral stain on this country. And if there is one, in my opinion, one area right now in our country that is the civil rights movement of our day, this is it. This is the civil rights movement of our day. This is our opportunity, like the abolitionists during slavery and like the civil rights leaders, Martin Luther King and others. This is the issue of our day. We need to remove and erase this stain from our national conscience if we're going to continue to be a healthy republic. And our role at AUL is multifaceted. We look from a short-term perspective, but also very much so from a long-term perspective. Short-term, we're committed to playing our role in the movement. We're committed to continuing to advance policy at state level, and that's through use of our model legislation that's been used over 400 times throughout the country within state legislatures. We're committed to continuing to advance use of court litigation to litigate laws that are antithetical to the pro-life movement. And so that is a kind of an emerging area of emphasis at AUL. And we're also committed to continue to advance the culture towards a pro-life culture. And again, recognizing that we play a small part of the role in the grand movement, the pro-life movement. But we need to do our part to help ensure individuals understand that this is a moral and spiritual issue that we're dealing with. And then long term, Rita, we're very much so committed to equal protection under the law. And I'm going to let Steve talk a bit more about what we're looking at from a personhood perspective that would guarantee life for all that would be welcomed into life and protected through law. So happy to be here again today. And thanks for the opportunity.
Of course. Well, I'm happy to hear you say the word personhood. I was very involved personally in a personhood effort here in Virginia several years ago. Steve, do you want to just go ahead now and tell us what that is and how that has to do with equal protection under the law?
Absolutely, Rita. There are different flavors that fall under the umbrella of the personhood label. And what we regard personhood to be is the commitment that, as we know, human life in the womb deserves protection. No human beings deserve less protection constitutionally than others. The question is, how do we get there? Some folks say that the Supreme Court just needs to declare that the 14th Amendment protects unborn human life. That carries some significant risks and a lot of history to it in the civil rights era and the Reconstruction era. It is a way forward, but we do not see the Supreme Court necessarily as going that way anytime soon. They must be pushed by the culture and by political leaders, frankly. Congress could do it under Section 5 of the 14th Amendment, which gives Congress the authority to protect human lives under the 14th Amendment. And if Congress declared that lives in the womb are human lives, persons under the 14th Amendment, we think the Supreme Court would follow suit. So there's a push on Congress. As I said earlier, Dobbs returned the issue to the people through the Congress and through the state legislatures. There's a huge need for scholarship in this area for us to understand what it means to guarantee human lives in the womb equal protection, either under the 14th Amendment ultimately, or under a congressional enactment, or by some other means. We have proposed ourselves a constitutional amendment called the Abortion Abolition Amendment, which is based upon the amendment that freed the slaves. And it simply says, abortion shall not exist in these United States. And then there are definitions, applications, and enforcement provisions. But we think that's a generational effort, and we're willing to make that commitment to this generational effort, because the first generational effort, as you know, was a 50-year effort to overturn Roe versus Wade. And we were engaged in this in the 70s when nobody was thinking this was going to work. And we insisted that it not only could work, it had to work. Our lawyers, our scholars, Clark Forsyth, worked tirelessly to implement the strategy in the courts that led to the overturn of Roe. So we're in it for the long haul. We think this is a necessary thing by whatever mechanism, an interpretation of the 14th Amendment, a new constitutional amendment, a convention of the states. We're game for it. We're all in. So, yeah.
That's great. Exciting time. You know, I want to comment on something I heard both of you say in the past few minutes. You characterize the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade as not sending the abortion issue back to the states, which is how most people talk about it, but sending it back to the people. Tell me what you mean by that and why the difference is significant.
Political leaders recently have been running for the exits on the abortion issue. It's very disappointing. Even the leading candidate for the Republican nomination said yesterday he would not sign a 15-week bill. We think that's a misunderstanding of Dobbs and a misconstruction of the role that Congress and the presidential administration should play in this area. I mean, we like to say federal policy is pro-life policy. You have the Hyde Amendment, which AUL helped pass and which we defended in the Supreme Court, that prohibits the use of Medicaid dollars for elective abortions. You have protections for pro-life doctors and nurses in the Coates-Snow Amendment, the Church Amendments, other amendments. You have protections against funding abortion overseas. All of those are in place. And all of those, we believe the president is required to administer, because that's his job, to administer the laws. And the Biden administration, instead of doing that, is busy trying to recreate out of whole cloth an imaginary federal right to abortion that disappeared when the Dobbs decision overturned Roe. So we fight against the Biden administration's attempts to do that, including on chemical abortion. But we also point out that it is the role of all institutions that are responsive to the people, the Congress, the states. That's what the Supreme Court said. And saying anything short of that is misrepresenting intentionally for political purposes what the Supreme Court said. It's an all-in situation. We have to have pro-life people engaged with Congress, engaged with their state lawmakers, in states where they are able to vote for their judges, they should be engaged there too. There's a lot going on in the state appeals courts as well. So this is a time for all hands on deck, not a time to retreat from any part of our government.
So just to reiterate for our audience, what I heard you just say was, it's significant that the issue is returned to the people, because if we think about it being returned to the states, it's easy to think we don't have a job to do now. We can leave it to the people already sitting in office, but there is work for all of us to be doing. So I want to make sure our audience is hearing that. I think you're exactly right. Now, I want to get into a couple of court cases, but before I do that, I want to ask you about a big, more general issue that's sort of the elephant in the room in an election year like this year. I've heard that Ben Shapiro has been talking about a need for pragmatism right now in our approach to abortion law and in looking at who we can vote for and who we can't vote for at the ballot box. What is your view on the conflict between principle? I'm sure that all three of us believe abortion is wrong from the moment of conception and the state should be protecting human life from that time on. But there's a conflict between that principle that we believe in very strongly and this idea that we have to settle for something less than that in order to make progress legally and culturally on the pro-life issue right now. I'd love for you to just comment on that and love to hear from both of you. So whoever wants to go first, jump in.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in first, Rita. We believe, firmly believe at AUL in the idea of incrementalism, that we will incrementally chip away at laws and policies that that are either pro-life or in defense of life, or laws that are antithetical to life. So we, and unlike some organizations in the space, believe that an incremental approach is the right way to go, understanding that our culture might not be ready for a complete ban of abortion, but incrementally so, we believe at AUL that we can move the needle in the right way. I'll also say that, and this is, I think, somewhat unique to Americans United for Life, we are committed to not only being pro-life, but very much so being pro-family from a policy perspective. So we played a leading role amongst pro-life organizations on the extension of the child tax credit. We are working diligently on proposed Make Birth Free, which would enable individuals to have more children. We believe we need to create a culture that not only defends life before birth, but very much so is pro-family in as much as possible. We feel like that is the avenue to bringing individuals that might not be solidly pro-life on board with us if we can really focus and hone in on how to be more pro-family. I'll give you a perfect example of incrementalism. If our goal is to reduce the number of abortions, becoming more pro-family will help do that. I look at the Hyde Amendment as a perfect example of incrementalism. It saved, I think, over a million lives. And just restricting federal funding for abortions, it's been in place for several years on appropriations bills. These are the sorts of policies that we believe, if our goal is to reduce the number of abortions, and even if it's an incremental reduction, that that is a win for the movement. Steve, would welcome your opinion there as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have to engage all levers at this point in time, politically, but culturally as well, recognizing that there's a perception that the culture hasn't caught up with the politics yet, that politicians are looking upstream and not seeing much love for the pro-life movement coming downstream from the culture, and that they're responding accordingly. I think they're not reading the room right. I mean, politically, even if you look at what's happened politically, right after the Dobbs case, the abortion industry got wiped out in the federal courts. They had like over 36 lawsuits dismissed summarily in the federal courts that were challenging abortion restrictions because there was no Roe versus Wade to hang their hat on. In the state legislatures, we now have 16 states that protect life at conception or nearly at conception, another half dozen that protect life at some level of gestation. Those were limits that were unenforceable before Dobbs. So the landscape is very different today than it was before Dobbs. It's increasingly pro-life, I like to say. However, the other side hasn't stopped. They've gone into state courts trying to create state rights to abortion, and they have been kicked out of those courts, I think at a rate of 0 for 8 now. They have lost in 8 states trying to recreate a state abortion right. The only place they've won, and the place that causes these politicians to run for the exits, is in these state ballot initiatives in places like Ohio, Kansas, Montana. Overall, the picture is strong and getting stronger. And we hope that the people will recognize that and catch up with it. So here's the rub. We believe and proclaim the personhood of all human lives in the womb, whether at 36 weeks or at 8 weeks, for the same reason. And it's consistent across all those levels of gestation because these are human lives that are infinitely valuable. And there's no distinction, in fact, and should be no distinction in law between a baby at 36 weeks and a baby at 8 weeks. We are trying to get the culture to recognize that. But in terms of backing off of principle, there's not only no need to, it would be wrong to do so. We would encourage advocates and lawmakers to say the same thing. Look, these are all human lives. If this is all we can do politically now, then we can save as many as we can possibly save, but we'll keep working for the day when every life is welcomed in culture and protected in law.
For what it's worth, I wholeheartedly endorse your approach. No, you weren't looking for that, but I think it's very wise to take that approach. Now, I want to move into talking about a couple of big court cases, and I'll go first to the one that was recently argued at the U.S. Supreme Court. Steve, you already mentioned it. It's the Food and Drug Administration versus Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. I'll let you tell us what that case is about and what are the implications of the court's decision in that.
Sure. As briefly as possible, because it is a procedurally complicated case.
Yeah.
This case was brought by five pro-life medical organizations to challenge the Food and Drug Administration's approval of the chemical abortion pills RU-46. That approval went in 2000, and there has been quite a bit of litigation and advocacy since then, the upshot of which is that the Court of Appeals in New Orleans, the Fifth Circuit, recently said that Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine could challenge the recent amendments that the first the Obama administration and now the Biden administration have put in place. They have raised the age of gestation from 7 weeks to 10 weeks when you could use it. They have eliminated the requirement to report instances where the pills have damaged women. It has led to, at last count, 32 deaths, but thousands of women have been damaged by chemical abortion. And yet, in 2016, the FDA eliminated the requirement to report that damage to the FDA. And then finally, they've eliminated in 2021 any requirement that a prescribing doctor or nurse actually give the patient a physical exam, actually have a face-to-face meeting. And that's very dangerous because about one in 50 pregnancies is an ectopic pregnancy, a non-viable pregnancy, which is very dangerous to the mother and a one-way ticket to the emergency room to take care of that procedure. But you cannot be detected without an in-person exam. What the FDA has done with these amendments is contrary to good medicine. It's contrary to women's safety. And that's what our friends at Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine have said. And that's why they brought this case to the Supreme Court. So we're hoping and praying the Supreme Court will see it this way also. They will affirm the right of pro-life doctors to protect their patients.
Thanks, Steve. It is a procedurally complicated case, but I know people are hearing about it, so it's helpful to have an expert sort of walk us through the basics. The other case I wanted to ask you about, Arizona Supreme Court just upheld a 160-year-old law banning abortions and imposing penalties on doctors who perform them. That seems like a big deal. And I've heard mixed views on whether it's ultimately a good thing or a bad thing. What are your thoughts on the case?
So my first thought is the abortion industry speaks out of both sides of its mouth. First of all, they always say, look, you know, before Roe, there was no protection really in law for human life. It's just something that you made up and we're not going to have that here. And now Arizona upholds a law that's been on the books for 150 years, as many of these state abortion bans have been. And suddenly they pop up and say, whoa, this law is 150 years old. It's got to go. The truth is the Arizona legislature has reaffirmed that law numerous times, including many times after Roe versus Wade was decided. That was the gist of the Arizona Supreme Court's decision. They said it may be a 150-year-old law, but even when the Arizona legislature was doing as much as it could under the Roe regime to protect women, to restrict abortion, and to lay out the health and safety conditions under which it could be offered, it was still reaffirming the ultimate ban on abortion that it had in place for 150 years. And so the Supreme Court of Arizona was right to affirm that, as we said in our friend of the court brief to the Arizona Supreme Court. So we're glad to see that. We know that it is now in the hands of the Arizona legislature. It's in the hands of the people on another state ballot initiative this fall. So it's far from over in Arizona, but at least let's remember that the state of Arizona is a pro-life state, and where the people of Arizona take it from there is up to them. But we hope and pray that we'll take it in that direction to continue to protect life.
Yeah, and I would say there's absolutely nothing provocative about what the Arizona Supreme Court did. They essentially said, this is a law, and we need to uphold, and we need to follow the law, which is what the judicial branch is meant to do. And so there's nothing provocative at all about what was done. Now, the next step is to convince both the legislature and the people of Arizona that being pro-life makes sense, and that's the role and the work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, gentlemen, we only have a couple minutes left. I do have one more substantive question I want to ask you briefly before we close. But before we get to that, because I don't want to run out of time for this, tell our audience how or where they can find out more about Americans United for Life and maybe contribute to the great work that you're doing there.
Yeah, thanks, Rita. So we need more support now than ever. Literally, we're now fighting 51 fights. We have a real need to grow the number of attorneys on the staff, to grow the number of individuals providing policy support. We're doing more to defend pregnancy resource centers from a legal perspective. Now we really need support. And I would encourage individuals to go to www.aul.org. Or just Google Americans United for Life and find our website, and would welcome contributions from individuals. It's such a blessing to have the community support Americans United for Life as a nonprofit. But really, even from a faith perspective, my pastor talks a lot about the importance of tithing and giving to organizations that are making a significant and substantive difference. Arguably, we're making a significant difference in the culture and in the lives of individuals. So your support means a great deal to Americans United for Life.
Absolutely. Okay, last question. We've got a little bit less than a minute for you to tackle it. How are we doing in the battle to win hearts and minds for the pro-life cause?
Well, the other side and the media would like you to think that we're doing a horrible job, but arguably, I do not think we're doing a horrible job. I think there is a lot of confusion, and this confusion is wrought by the other side and the deep pockets from the abortion movement on their end. But I would argue that the silent majority remains. There is a silent majority in this country that honors life, that respects life. Our job now, more than ever, is to bring the faith community on board with us, to bring churches on board, and to have pastors speaking to the pro-life issue, not from a political perspective, but again, from a moral and a spiritual perspective. We're not going to win this fight if we don't have the faith community behind us in big ways.
Absolutely. Well, we will let that be the last word. John Mize, Steve Aiden, thank you so much for the amazing work that you are doing at Americans United for Life, and thank you for being on the program today.
Thanks, Rita.
God bless you.
I also want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services, Blessings Christian Bookstore, Sunshine Ministries with Christian Radio, Wishing Well Florists and Travel, and our good friends at New Beginnings Church and Garber's Church of the Brethren. Thank you all for listening and for your financial support. If you'd like to make a donation to Crossroads, you can just send a check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia, 22803. I'm Rita Peters with Mark Meckler, inviting you to join us again next week for another edition of Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.